You are listening to the Effective Statistician Podcast, the weekly podcast with Alexander Schacht and Benjamin Pieske, designed to help you reach your potential, lead great science, and serve patients without becoming overwhelmed by work. Have you ever considered a career outside of statistics? Then listen well. This is an interview with Lucy Roll. I know Lucy for quite some time, and if you're a long-time listener, you have heard from her already in the very, very early podcast episodes of this podcast. And today we are talking not about PSI, we are not talking about life as a statistician, it's more about life beyond being a statistician and how your expertise as a statistician can help you in job outside of statistics, still within the pharma industry, but really, really interesting career perspective from Lucy here. So stay tuned. And of course, Lucy is the chair of PSI. And so this podcast is produced in association with PSI. We have worked on the remit of PSI. And that's why I'm always talking about PSI as a community dedicated to leading and promoting the use of statistics within the healthcare industry for the benefit of patients. And Lucy was really instrumental in creating this new remit. Join PSI today to further develop your statistical capabilities with access to the ever-growing video on-demand content library, free registration to all PSI webinars, and much, much more. If you're in a non-high-income country, the annual fee is just £20, and for high-income countries, it's just £95. So, really, really cheap. Visit the PSI website at psiweb.org to learn more about PSI activities and become a PSI member today. Welcome to another episode of The Effective Statistician. And today we have a guest here on the show that has been on the show already twice and was one of our first interview guests on the show. Hi, Lucy. How are you doing?
Hi, Alexander. I'm well, thank you. How are you?
Very good. And as usual, I have my co-host here. Hi, Benjamin.
Hi, Alexander. Hi, Lucy. How are you?
Hi, Benjamin. Good.
Awesome. It's so great to talk to each other. I just, you know, got an email yesterday from a listener and talking about the podcast, how inspiring it is, how helpful it is, and how he's listening it when he's commuting. Oh. And it was such a great motivation to keep going. Yeah. And he also called out PSI as an excellent association. And the podcast inspired him to attend one of the events in February this year, which was, he said, of very, very high quality. And as we today have the chair of PSI here, I thought that is a very, very good thing to say.
Yeah, that's very lovely to hear. That's really great.
Okay, but today we are not talking about specifically PSI. We are talking about how statisticians can have an impact beyond statistics and how statisticians can also, let's say, step out of statistics in a way a little bit. So, because Lucy has a very, very inspiring career up to now. You have started as a statistician, but then you got further responsibilities. Can you tell a little bit about that and how did this happen?
Sure. So, yeah, so I spent probably about 9-10 years of my career being a statistician in clinical development, working across a number of different therapeutic areas, a whole heap of different phases of drug development. But while I was doing that, I really loved actually drug development itself and sort of the bigger sort of broader scope of what we're trying to do as statisticians and as an organization. So quite early on in my career, I'd sort of made a decision that I wanted to take on one of these roles, which in Roche, where I work, are called a global development team leader. I think they'll be called slightly different things in different organizations, but pretty much this is a role where you are accountable and leading a cross-functional team of people to really define and develop what that clinical development program and strategy would be for a molecule. And so on those teams, there actually was a statistician. I wasn't sitting there as the statistician, I was sitting there as the leader. And it contained people from regulatory, operations, clinical pharmacology, clinical science, a lot of other companies that I'm aware of. Usually the person who takes this type of role is somebody with a medical background. So I feel very privileged and very lucky actually at Roche that they're open to people from any background taking these on, if, as long as you're showing, you know, strong leadership and a strong understanding about drug development and what that is. I sort of went and did that for a couple of years. So wasn't doing really a huge amount of statistics at that time. I had some great statisticians that I worked with on those programs. And then from there, I sort of made a decision I wanted to see a different part of the organization. And I actually went and did a rotation into the UK affiliate. And in the UK affiliate, I was doing a sort of like hybrid role of medical manager and a sort of brand manager, so more on the commercial side. Again, doing nothing to do with statistics. Purely, that was really just trying to provide two groups like I had been leading in the past, sort of what is the impact of those development programs to a UK market? What do we need to think about in terms of data that would need to be collected if we're thinking about NICE submissions, etc.? What are our sort of key opinion leaders within the local market going to be interested, etc.? So it was very external facing for the organization and was really, really insightful. I really, really enjoyed that. And then I sort of moved back into more of a sort of statistics type of role, I guess. I now work within the data science group. And in that group, everybody's got a whole range of different backgrounds, including statistics and epidemiology and other types of mathematics and computing. So it's not the statistics group within Roche, but I would say it's much more related to data than where I was before. For me personally, sort of how I got there and how I was thinking about that. So I think a lot of that was driven personally by me and my motivation to do something a bit different. I had really great support from my manager and other people, but I think actually what was one of the most important things for me actually was the network that I built around the organization. Mm-hmm. I think if it had purely just been down to me and my manager, it would have been a bit more of a harder sort of, would have been a harder opportunity to do.
So in terms of the network, you built that already while you were doing your usual stats job? Okay. Yeah.
So I just made sure that when I was, you know, I mean, as a statistician, you interact with lots of different people. And I think it was just an opportunity to be curious, to find out what people are doing and to bring those sort of connections and those links across different groups of like how statistics and statisticians can support any of those functions within sort of drug development and beyond. And the same to them. So I think for me, I usually build most of my networks around a case of like, how can we both support each other to try and maximize what we're trying to do? And then I think that sort of curious nature and that sort of opportunity of wanting to learn, etc., sort of resonated with people, and people sort of knew you were interested and curious about things beyond what's purely just happening within the statistics framework. And, you know, that just built up over multiple years and years of time and working on different projects. If you just keep doing that, your network just grows. And I've often found that, you know, opportunities tend to not necessarily come. You've still been formally interviewed and everything. But just by having those networks and understandings, I think it's quite critical to help you sort of think about alternate paths that you may not automatically know about within just a purely statistics framework.
You already answered some of the, you know, the questions that was coming up next for my side, at least regarding. So you already mentioned the networking, the curiosity to just, you know, move on and do things differently. So, but what other learnings would you say, you know, helped you from your role as a statistician? So where you think, you know, your career as a statistician started as a statistician, as you mentioned, but then what else helped you to be successful, not only to get into the role, but be successful in that role?
So I think statisticians are actually really, really well placed. Maybe I'm a bit biased.
We are probably all a bit biased.
But I think we're really well placed because I think especially like nowadays, most companies are trying to think about data-driven decisions and how we can best utilize data to advance all types of different parts of research in the drug development healthcare space. And that's something that just comes sort of quite naturally to us. So I think the fact that, one, usually we're pretty logical, so we can think through problems in quite a sort of logical way. Secondly, that actually we're really good at taking very complex problems and hopefully trying to distill them into something very straightforward and simple. And I think that's usually one of the most critical pieces. And I would encourage anyone to just keep practicing on that skill set, particularly because even if wherever you go, you're always going to have a huge amount of information that you're going to have to condense to something very, very short and sweet to be able to communicate to people, to get them sort of on board with your ideas and your thinking. So I think that for us as a sort of group of statisticians is a skill set that we can really, really leverage more. And then I think
and being aware about that is, I think, also really important because quickly we take that for granted very, very often.
Yeah, we do. We do. And then I think the other things is just around, I think usually statisticians actually have quite a lot of integrity. Like, we really want to make sure that what we're doing with analyses and insights and messaging, et cetera, you know, is really spot on. I mean, sometimes we can be maybe a little bit too particular about that. But, you know, I think integrity is something that's really, really important in any sort of business group, department, job that you're doing. And I think that's one thing that, again, I think is sort of innate to the nature of sort of what we're doing. So they'd be the key things I would probably say.
And on the other hand, so when you say that this helped you in your new role, what things did you then need to learn in your new role? So what do you think? I mean, obviously there are different topics, but it's just like from the mindset, maybe also from the structural questions on that.
Yeah. So I think one thing I would say is always keep learning. I don't think and maybe that's also the side of a good leader, is that people always wanting to learn and find out new things. And I think that's probably one thing that's key. You always think, oh, I feel like I know a lot. I know a lot about this topic. I'm a bit of an expert. And then you soon realize, that you get thrown into a situation, you realize that's not really. I think for me, there was a couple of things. I think one area was really trying to make sure I was always thinking big picture. What is happening? What is going on? When you're thinking about decisions that need to be made, and I think this can apply wherever you are in your career and whatever type of role that you're in, making sure you're really clear of like where it is as a company, out as a molecule, etc., of where you're trying to go, and sort of keep that in mind.
So, do you have an example for that where this big picture thinking helped you?
So I do. I've got a couple of examples, but I'll go. The example I'll say, it was helpful, but it was also a huge learning, I think, for me. So bit that comes, I think, for me with the big picture is what we would call here at Roche, like this portfolio mindset. So some of this is around, you know, we all have a love for our products that we work on and needing to be able to think above that. And I definitely had an example where there was a project that I was leading. I was one of the development leaders on, and we were given this task of, okay, well, you know, the product's only got a couple of years left on its patent. We were looking to see, was there an opportunity through varying different processes with pediatrics to be able to add an extra 6 months of exclusivity onto that patent. And so we'd been tasked as a development team to think about, okay, one, would there be a pediatric indication we could go into? And then secondly, would we be able to run the trial and then get the regulatory approval and everything passed through to get this expansion? And so the team worked really, really, really hard to figure out, like, could we do this? And we came up with a couple of different options of potentially how that could work. As the leader and as somebody then who had to go and sort of present that back to sort of some of the governing bodies with the money, I actually made the decision that we shouldn't move forward, that we did have some options, but they were really, really high risk, I personally felt. From the experiences that we have had more broadly going into disease areas that we don't know very well, usually we always overestimate recruitment. We always do. So actually, though the team was super, super passionate about, like, yes, we found a solution, we found a way, as the leader, I had to sort of tone that down and then go in and say, actually, we have these options, but I don't think this is what we should do. I don't think this is actually the right path. I think you would be better spending your money somewhere else than on this molecule and on this process, this sort of plan. You know, actually the decision went with what my recommendation was. We didn't move ahead. But that was really, really tough, and it was really, really upsetting for the team because they'd been working really, really hard to get this all done. And, you know, they were really passionate about the project and the molecule. But for me, it came down to, I was also passionate about the molecule, but I had a really great, like, leader of the biometrics group for many, many years who I worked with. And he was always like, always think, like, this is your money, this is your business, what would you do? And so with that mindset, I was like, this is not where I would spend my money. I would put this into another molecule, another project that's probably got a much higher chance of success. That for me was like a big learning, but it's something I still do. I still always try and make sure that we have that broader view in mind of, like, just because I work on one molecule or whatever that may be, that I'm not only thinking about that the money still, if I take it, is not being used somewhere else, or the resources or the people, etc. But it's a tough one, and there was certainly a lot of learning from myself of, like, how to handle that type of situation as a leader.
Yeah, that leads us to a little bit to the topic of the leadership itself. So, I mean, you mentioned the leadership in many ways already, directly or indirectly. So, like, also the comparison from being a statistician, we talk about this in our podcast quite often about leadership, but also now you had examples where you think this is a leadership that doesn't really, you haven't learned from being a statistician, really. So what does it then actually mean for you personally, leadership?
Yeah, so I think there's a few different things. So I definitely, I guess maybe just to caveat at the beginning, and I don't think I maybe explained this when I was talking just quickly through myself. So I guess I definitely think leadership has got nothing to do with management. So that's one thing I'll maybe state right up at the front. I've actually, my 18 years, in September this year, I've been working for 18 years in the pharma industry, and only 16 of those were as an individual contributor. Only the last couple of years have I actually done any management. So all of these roles I've been speaking about have all been done with no management responsibility at all. They've all been matrix management. So it was all done as an individual contributor. And so I feel really passionate that leadership does come at any level and through anybody. It isn't automatically associated with being a manager.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. It's kind of the typical leadership set that we as statisticians are working on anyway all the time. Because you can't tell your physician what to do. You can't tell your regulatory person what to do. You can't tell your clinical operations people what to do, or all the other cross-functional things. And it's the same way, you know, the other way. So your physician can't tell you how to design the study or, you know, what the sample size should be. Well, maybe that's an exception, but... but anyway, there's always, you need to have these, you know, cross-functional influencing skills. And if you as a listener have a problem with this word leadership, yeah, just think about getting the other one to buy into ideas and creating a situation where everybody works together in an aligned way. That is leadership.
Yeah, but I would still just go back to the sense that you just mentioned, Lucy, that management doesn't have anything to do with leadership, because I would say management is just a subset of leadership. So yeah. I mean, for, you know, it's not an equivalent, but it's definitely for management you still need leadership.
So oh, completely agree. Yeah, I mean, I think for me, like, a lot of leadership comes down to that ability to be able to sort of inspire, bring people together, somebody who's really good at being able to listen and listen to lots of different diverse viewpoints, not just come in with a, this is what I'm going to say and do. But then once, you know, you've been able to listen and to sort of bring in and hear those different viewpoints, that you actually can make a decision. You can actually come to a sort of a thought of what you need to do and then actually be able to communicate really clearly of why. Especially if there are diverse viewpoints around the room and people are thinking slightly different things, I think you need to be able to really clearly explain that. But then at the same time, I think you need to have built a lot of trust within the team. And to that, to the point, like Alexander was saying, really that feeling of the team know you've got their back, or at least that, you know, they understand why you're going with a certain situation and a certain position. And that you're going to be able to influence. I think influencing is so important as you get into these types of roles, whether it's influencing at your own level or influencing stakeholders above or below where you are. And a lot of that obviously comes down to the communication and being able to do that in many different ways, depending on different people's styles, etc.
And then finally, so if we talk about influencing, there's a fine line to manipulating people. how do you think about that? Because I think for some people, influencing might have some negative connotations, actually.
Yeah, no, I absolutely agree. I think it can. I mean, I think influencing, for me, you have to go in some ways, but open to being influenced yourself. So I think this is the point. It's not that when you're influencing, you just have to come back with, I did the right thing, I've influenced, I've made somebody change their mind. I think you also need to be willing to say, okay, actually, I might come back with a different thing because I've been influenced to change my mind. So I think you have to sort of be able, and I think that's then when it's not the manipulation, to be able to do that. And then again, being able to understand why potentially you've been influenced and why you've changed your mind. I think for me, when I think about influencing, it's actually just making sure that people have really understood what you're saying and really have all the information that they can have to make a decision. So I think usually when we think about influencing, it's usually you're trying to get someone to sort of either make the decision you want, or that, you know, you're trying to get them to do something or think about something in a certain way. So for me, I always think people can still be really successful with influencing as long as they've made sure that the person that they're sort of talking to or communicating with has really understood your perspective and your issues. And if they don't make that decision, then that's fine. Obviously, you would like potentially for that to be the case, but I think you need to be sort of flexible to what that looks like. That's my own personal take on it.
I think there's the integrity that you mentioned earlier comes into place. So if people think you have a good character, you have everything, you know, in mind of the team. It's not kind of your personal interests mm-hmm. that you're mainly looking after. You're looking after the team, you're looking after the companies, the organization to drive that forward. And you have built that trust and then, you know, by design, so to say, it's not manipulating. It's driving the team forward to achieve something, to achieve a common goal. You're influencing in such a way that everybody gets hurt, that you make the best decision possible with the information that you have, and that you decisively move forward.
Yeah, it's basically the driving forward by facts and not by an opinion.
I would say emotions still play a big, big role in it.
You can't cut them out. It's just that the nature of a statistician is rather based on facts, I would say, than on the purely emotions. And that's why I think that's a really good skill set that we usually bring in with, you know, influencing more by facts than just by some.
Yeah, I would really agree with that, Benjamin. And I'm actually thinking of an example that's not mine, actually. It was somebody else's. But, you know, again, because with things like interim analyses and go, no-go decisions and a number of, just remember this one example where everybody from the stats team was like, this is blatantly not working. But clinical and others just really, really felt very passionate, very strongly, and kept it going. And yeah, 3 years later, it failed. It was just down to other people being like really, really passionate and not being able to take that mindset of, okay, let's just be a little bit sometimes black and white about what's actually happening.
And especially interim analysis are quite easy things because it's a really like a clear yes, no. It should be a really clear yes, no decision, but obviously,
But that is, you know, where being right is not good enough. So if the complete stats function thinks they are right and they are actually right, if they can't convince the others to follow them, if they can't communicate it in such a way that the others can understand it, if they don't have the relationship with the others so that they get listened to, then they can have all the logic and all the facts on their side, they still will not be able to bring the organization on the right path. So in terms of your career, you have, when you took the leap outside of stats, how did that feel for you?
Yeah, so it was a really interesting time. I'm always very brutally honest about this, actually, which is maybe sometimes not the best thing. But so it was one of those really interesting things where I felt, oh, I was really prepared for this. I'm really excited. Off I go. I'm going to get on this new role. It's going to be great. And I was really, really surprised at how scared, nervous, just unsure of myself, I think, really, which is really sort of strange because at the time I'd been working on a bigger project and I'd sort of been backing up for people. So I'd sort of got some experience of what to do, but suddenly when everything was on your shoulders, it just felt such a different situation. I mean, in terms of the physical moving out of Biostats, I sort of still had Biostats was still my home. I was doing the role from still being in statistics. I just was obviously doing no statistics. It was just a completely different type of activity. But so in that sense, it didn't necessarily feel that different. And I mean, for me, I love meeting new people and I love trying new things. So that wasn't the daunting bit. I think the daunting bit was sort of moving from something I knew really, really well and felt like I understood something that there was a huge amount of responsibility on your shoulders and just making sure you were doing the right thing. And I was really lucky, actually. Roche did give me a coach quite early on and he was brilliant, and I still go back to a lot of the things that he sort of taught me and like made me think about. And I would definitely be, I'm a huge advocate for anybody to get a coach or a mentor, particularly someone you don't know, somebody sort of in either a different area completely or and a sort of independent person or somebody that you trust that you can be very sort of open with and who can sort of bring a different viewpoint to sort of what's happening. But yeah, it really, really surprised me. And so I know for other people who've taken on sort of similar roles or done other things, I've always, as I say, been fairly transparent to say it could be a bit of a shock to the system, and don't worry about that. And you have to sort of eventually, you'll come round to having faith in your abilities and knowing that you'll get through it. But yeah, it was completely different to what I expected.
Yeah. And just, you know, just yesterday in my calendar was a really nice quote regarding that feeling. More often than not, being brave means doing it scared. And it's, that comes really, really timely.
That's perfect. Yeah.
It's. I think that is always if you want to grow, you need to kind of step out of your comfort zone. And that always means, by definition, it feels uncomfortable. Mm-hmm. It feels scary. But that's where you can grow, where you can, you know, develop yourself, where you find new confidence in yourself, where you can try out new things. And of course, there will probably be failures from time to time and setbacks. Did you have these as well?
Plenty. there definitely was. I mean, I don't think there was necessarily like from the project side of things, but certainly in terms of learning and development. And I think there was many things that I think I took for granted a little bit, actually, how different people are. And I think that's one thing now as a leader, I always try to make sure I really understand the people on my team, what drives them, what motivates them. I think I may have even shared it with you, Alexander. When I became a manager, I was extra sensitive to this. And so I sort of had this like getting to know you questions that I make sure I always go through with people to sort of really find out what their drivers. And I think when I started, I was a little bit naive. I always thought, yeah, you want diversity and people like different styles and things. But I think I actually kept my style probably fairly sort of similar. And I sort of quickly realized that was not going to work. And you really, really need to be able to adapt your sort of leadership style and how you work with different people to get the best out of the group as a whole. So I think that was sort of one major sort of failing in terms of, I think it probably held us back for a little while because of that. But then I think it was a helpful sort of growth area for me to be able to sort of go, all right, okay, how do I do that? And I think that's actually even more important, not just for the group that you're working with, but for the stakeholders and others that you're having to manage up. Because I think when you go back to things like influencing, if you don't really understand how their style and how their way of thinking works, you're just going in with a standard sort of like, oh, this is how I'm going to approach this, either this problem or how I'm going to approach this topic.
Do you have an example for that? Example for this kind of differing styles?
Yeah, so I think I'll do a super basic one and then I'll maybe go into something more if there's the time. So I think some of the super basic ones is I've worked with people who don't like any chit-chat. And they find that that gets them really sort of, it's like, my time is precious. I don't want to be asking about how's the weekend, how's this going? They just want you to come in. Here's my question, bang, 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 off you go, you're out within 10 minutes and you're done. And some senior leaders I found that's how their style have been. And then for others, if you try that, and that isn't my style at all, I'm much more in the, how are you doing? How's things going? But then other people need that. And if you don't do it, they feel like you're not interested, you're not engaged, you don't care about them. I think that's like one really simple one about how sometimes different people think about things in slightly different ways. I think in terms of some bigger ideas, there's actually things more to do with are people reflectors or not. So for some people, do you really need to, and visually, do you need to give things more in a visual format and advance, so that they've got plenty of time to think it through and absorb it, so that when you go in, they already know what they're sort of thinking about, and they've got their questions and they can have a dialogue. Whereas other people, it's just a case of, no, I just need a list of facts, and I just want you to, I don't have time to read anything, just come in and tell me what it is. But if you go to the first type of person, in the second solution of, okay, well, I'm not going to give you any pre-read, and I'm not going to give you visual stuff, it's just going to be bullet points of fact, then for them, they just sort of block out immediately. Mm-hmm. So I think those are just like a couple of more straightforward ones of understanding how people make decisions and sort of how their mind works can really help make you much more successful or not. And you'll only find that out from having conversations. And that's where I guess I go back to things like the networking and understanding in advance how people work then can make you much more successful later on.
Hmm. Yeah, we talked a lot about your experience and your things that you did in your career. But just now, that we know that many of statisticians are listening to us. So what would you give as a kind of a short recommendation as a way, like, first of all, like, is there a good time point maybe to switch career? Is there some recommendation? I mean, we don't want anyone to switch careers. We need statisticians. So it's just as a matter of fact. And also, so what would be the key things to give them, you know, on their way if they decide to do so?
Yeah, so I would say the timing, I think, is so individual of like what would work for you and when. So I think, you know, you need to make sure that if you're wanting to move, you know, you do that at the time you feel that that's comfortable. I am certainly a huge advocate of people moving around, even if you eventually come back to statistics. I think what you can learn and what you can bring back to your sort of statistics function and to yourselves by learning other parts of an organization, I think is huge. So I certainly am a big advocate. And if there's anyone who's listening online who's interested or curious or wants to know more, I'm 100% open to people reaching out to me and getting in touch, having a chat about anything. I think it's like for me personally, I think it's like a really, really great asset for people to have that experience. So I think when they do it, it comes down to them. I think one thing I learned that I would say is actually, if you're interested in moving outside, is actually let people know. I think this actually was one thing I was quite naive to at the beginning, is that I thought I told my manager and my manager will sort of help me figure this out, and they absolutely did. But it wasn't until I started telling other people around the organization that I was interested, because they then said to me, well, I was surprised, I didn't even realize you were bothered about doing anything like this. And again, you know, as they network and as they're talking, they could be like, oh, I spoke to so-and-so, they were interested in doing something like this. So I think one thing I always recommend to people is, whatever it may be, just let people know. Don't be too shy or embarrassed to sort of tell people where your interests lie and what you could be curious to do. It doesn't all have to come down to you and sort of you and your manager, so to speak. I think the other thing I would say is that, again, it's the network. So just keep meeting people and talking to people and finding out about things, because I think also you don't necessarily always know what's going on that could be of interest. So if you feel like you would like to do something or try something different, just talk to a whole range of different people. You'll probably find out there's like tens of jobs that you would be really well suited for that you never even knew existed, whether that be in your company or somewhere else. So just be really open. And then the last thing really with that is the curiosity. I would just say, just be curious all the time to what's going on, whether that's within statistics or outside of statistics, because I think that curiosity will hopefully drive you and keep you sort of always doing something that's interesting and motivating you in your sort of career. And for most of us, we're going to be in a job for a long time. It's something that we love.
Yeah, curiosity is really driving the motivation. So that's really key. No, I agree on that one.
Yeah, very good. I think we talked about a lot of different things today. And as we are now at the end talking about the network, we are really coming back to the beginnings that, you know, where statisticians can build our network across the organization. We have lots of natural counterparts outside of statistics that we talk to, where we can learn about the bigger picture of things. We can, through our day job as statisticians, improve our leadership skills, which will help us to grow within statistics, but also outside of statistics. Yeah. And lots of these skill sets that we talked about today that helped you to succeed outside of statistics will also help you to succeed within statistics.
Absolutely.
For sure. Yeah. And having this, for example, this big picture mindset says that, you know, okay, what is really important here is, am I working on the right things in the projects? Or is that project even, you know, should it be stopped, killed for to save the budget, the resources for other projects? I think that was a very, very nice example of big picture thinking. And yeah, I think that shows that we are not bound to
You're back.
You're on. Oh, he doesn't realize.
Ah, no, now I'm back. I don't know. My computer blacked out.
Oh, no. And that's funny, Alexander, because I said at the beginning I was worried mine was going to do that. You was like, don't worry, yours will be fine.
No, my computer just went into sleep mode for whatever reason.
Oh.
Even see,
hopefully I haven't bored it too much.
Now the telephone is ringing in the background. So, like, things can be go crazy.
Hey, this is life.
Yeah, that's life.
Yeah.
Okay, to sum it up for the listeners, I think there are a lot of things that we can learn as statisticians that will help us be successful outside of statistics. And if we have the mindset that we want to create great products for our for patients to help them live healthier, longer lives, then there are lots of opportunities to do that outside of statistics as well. Mm-hmm. So in that regard, become an effective statistician, and maybe at some point you can leverage all your statistical knowledge as well as your leadership's knowledge outside of statistics. Lucy, any final thoughts on that?
No, just go and have fun.
That's actually a very, very nice final thought.
I mean, okay. It's your career, it's your life. You make it what you want to be. Just have fun as you do it, and then all will be right.
Thanks so much, Lucy.
Thanks, Lucy.
Thanks, guys.
This show was created in association with PSI. Thanks to Rain, who helps with the show in the background, and thank you for listening. Head over to TheEffectiveStatistician.com to find the show notes, subscribe to the email list, and learn more about our podcast to boost your career as a statistician in the health sector. And if you like these discussions, tell your colleagues about it, because they may like it too. Reach your potential, lead great science, and serve patients. Just be an effective statistician.